Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Touchline for ZipSportsMedia.com. We're coming to you live and in living colour from the corridors of Curzon Ashton this afternoon. It's an away game for me, it's a home game for Aaron as the manager's son and the press officer for Curzon Ashton. I'm your host Sean Watson, and as I've just said, Aaron Flanagan's with me. And we've got our own studio today, haven't we, Aaron?
I know, we've got so you say studio, but just kind of in a room that is left with tables and chairs stacked. And we're just hoping that nobody's going to burst through the door and interrupt us at any point. So
yeah,
it could happen, but I mean, I can't see anyone wanting any chairs. So
yeah, expect a late running in this show, a bit of a cameo appearance from somebody at the club. The reason we're here today is because Aaron snowed under with work at the club ahead of their huge FA Cup second round fixture on Sunday, live on BT Sport against AFC Wimbledon. Aaron, how's your week gone so far? Has it been busy?
It's been hectic. It's been mad. We say as a club, we've never organised an event of this size before, but it's weird. It's weird being on the inside of a club for such a big occasion, but it's exciting. And you know, if anybody's listening who hasn't got tickets, we've still got tickets left. So get in touch with the club. It'll be me answering the phone. So
yeah, ring Aaron directly.
So give us a ring and I can get them sorted.
What are the prices of the tickets, just quickly?
£12 for adults, £6 for concessions and students, and £3 for under 16. So, I mean, for FA Cup second round football, given the fact that we are one game away from playing the likes of Manchester United, Manchester City, it really is bargain football. And I tell you, it'll be a great afternoon. Really will.
Yeah, definitely. This podcast will be coming out Thursday night as you listen to it. So you've got a couple of days if you haven't got your ticket yet to either get down to the club in person or give Aaron a bell, and he can reserve your tickets for yourself and whoever's buying them. But if you can't get down to the ground, they are on BT Sport 1.
Yes.
12 o'clock, Sunday the 4th of December. So if you can't get down to the ground, I'm sure you'll catch it on the box. It's going to be a weird experience for me, actually, because I'll be able to sit at home and watch Curzon then United in the same day.
One sec. You're sitting at home and you're not coming down?
Did I not tell you that?
Oh, here we go. Bloody hell.
Well, I said to my dad didn't want to...
I could do a big pre-mid on a storm out here, couldn't I?
Mic down. And
yeah. I could ban you from the club. I could get you kicked out of the club now.
You could?
Yeah.
How are you going to do?
No.
That's good. It'd be a very short episode 6 of this podcast. Yeah, but I can actually sit home and watch Curzon and United back-to-back, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, pretty surreal. We're going back-to-back with United. Wow.
Yeah, and I don't get to miss either. So that's Sunday. That's the intro to the show. That's why we are at Curzon Ashton Football Club today, as opposed to Aaron's glamorous car. we'll start off this week with a bit of news from last week, actually. We mentioned on the show last week, I got a notification on my phone saying that Steven Gerrard had been linked with the MK Dons job, and we said, well, is it going to be a player manager's role? Well, we know now it's not going to be a player manager's role because he's retired. It's not looking like he's going to be giving the MK Dons job. Has the MK Dons job been filled?
No. The chap in charge of Hearts, Robbie Nielsen, is in talks and is expected to be named the manager.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't even looked at anything news related to he might have been announced today as manager, but I fully expect Robbie Nielsen to be MK Dons manager.
Anyway, we thought Gerrard might be in talks, and he was, as a player manager, but he's not a player anymore because he hung up his boots last week. Sort of expected, really. His career's petered out since he left Liverpool, gone to the Galaxy. Didn't really set the world on light, as you'd expect, really. It's a bit of a holiday home, isn't it?
It's a tough one when you go over to the MLS, because by the time you go over, you know that you're on your last legs. And to be fair, I think the only player who I've really seen go over there and do it properly over the last few years has been David Villa.
Right.
For New York City, who's gone over and done really, really well. Over there, Gerrard struggled. I mean, at the end of the day, he was struggling for Liverpool at the point that he left. You can't deny that. But I mean, at the same time, he's possibly Liverpool's greatest ever player, arguably and almost definitely the Premier League's greatest ever midfielder. And United fans, Paul Scholes, Chelsea fans with Lampard, come at me. but he was just a class above. He really, really was. And it's a shame to see someone struggle who has been so good. It wasn't to be. And exciting times now for what lies ahead.
Yeah, without a doubt. I tweeted last week as a United fan that Gerrard was one of my favourite ever players. which is high praise from a United fan. I'm sure not too many would admit that Steven Gerrard's one of your favourite players. But in response to that, a friend of mine tweeted me back saying he's the most overrated Premier League midfielder in the history of the league. Now, I think half of this is to poke the stick.
Yeah.
But he can't... this probably speaks for a lot of United fans. He can't stand Steven Gerrard. Now, I don't know if that's just bitterness, because I can't believe that he actually thinks that Steven Gerrard was overrated.
Well, I don't know. I think it is club-related. Because obviously,
this lad is a United fan. Yeah,
because obviously, I'm a Manchester City fan and have been my whole life. And growing up, I used to think Paul Scholes was renowned for example, was his tackling, and he was dirty. And you saw, because I mean, at the end of the day, he could not tackle.
No.
Paul Scholes could not tackle,
no.
And he'd leave one in on people, and you'd go, God, he's an absolute nightmare. So as a City fan, I'm thinking, go, I don't see what people are. Obviously, you watch it back, you learn, you realise that in fact Scholes was one of the greatest ever. Maybe obviously it'll be the same for United fans looking at Liverpool. You don't want to like a Liverpool player.
It's begrudging.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, you have to like him.
Yeah.
You have to like him, and alright, I know he's had a couple of incidents like in his career, that might rub people up the wrong way, but I think he goes across, gets about his business in the right way. Gerrard always has done. Seems to have always played with a smile on his face, and he's generally, performed well. And I think he should be honoured for a seriously, seriously good career. And Liverpool might never, ever have a central midfielder as iconic as him ever again.
Completely agree. It's a shame actually that just recently his most famous moment has been his slip against Chelsea, that essentially did cost Liverpool the league title. I don't want him to be remembered like that. But I think there's a danger it's going that way with the internet age. And
I don't know if you saw on Sky Sports last week, they do the football gold programmes. They did football gold, Gerrard slips.
Oh.
And it's been shown a few times now. And it's just, it's not Liverpool versus Chelsea football gold, it is Gerrard slips. I mean, it was such an iconic moment. And in a weird way, it's a nice story for an autobiography anyway, and stuff like that. Almost like he was set for this fairy tale ended, and yet it was just slipped away from him.
Quite literally. Excuse the pun. Quite literally after he'd said the week before, let's not let this slip. Using the word it was just poetic in a way.
It was incredible. The way everything worked together. The way that obviously had that game against Crystal Palace as well, where they were 3-0 up with not 10 minutes to go, and they drew. I mean, that whole title from that season has got to be one of my favourite ever, because Liverpool were great to watch that year.
Without a doubt. We've said this before on this programme, actually.
Yeah, when they had, obviously, Luis Suarez playing up front, and
Sturridge was at his best that season.
And Brendan Rodgers got him playing some real, real good football, real attractive football. And it really complimented Gerrard in the team as well. And, it's a shame that, I'm a City fan, so it's not a shame that they didn't go on to win the title. But no, in a way, because of how good they were, and the way from Italy, it would have been a great story. But it's just as good of a story that, he didn't quite get there. And
it is, yeah.
And it's a shame for him, because he's literally won everything else that he could have won in his career.
Here's my stance on that sort of title winning season for City. A lot of United fans still take the mick out of Steven Gerrard for slipping and costing Liverpool the league, which is fine. Not a problem with that. The only beef I have with the United fans cheering Liverpool falling over is that City won the league. Now, for me, Manchester City is a more bitter rivalry than Liverpool for me as a 23-year-old lad. I don't remember Liverpool being a successful team. I was born after their success.
God, that's like a bit of a rub down on Liverpool.
No, it's been in my lifetime. Obviously, Liverpool are one of the most successful English teams of all time, certainly in Europe. But personally, for me, the rival has always been City.
Yeah. My whole childhood, you still. Even though myself, obviously, in my relatively early 20s, I have to say relatively early. No, that's not good. I'm not just early 20s, I'm like mid-20s.
Yeah, God,
bloody hell.
I could probably say mid-20s.
Get the bus pass out, bloody hell. Anyway.
You'll be in concessions soon at your own games.
But, as a kid, I always, saw Liverpool as one of the big things. So they always were. Remember, the Premier League had a top four for ages. The United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea.
Nobody
could get in there for about 8 years. Liverpool and them. So you always considered them as a big team, a big club, because they won trophies as well. You've got to remember, they still won the FA Cups, they still won League Cups, they won the Champions League, they made another Champions League final, they won the UEFA Cup. You know, and that's all in kind of my teenage years. So you say, God, they're a successful, they're a winning team.
Yeah.
It's just that they missed one vital trophy, and the one that they all wanted. And and one that, I mean, let's be honest, looking at this season, they could win very, very soon. But it's going back to Gerrard, it's a shame that, you know, Gerrard won't get a medal for it.
Yeah, it is a shame, but we'll get over it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure he will when he checks his bank balance and thinks, oh, yeah, I've only got 50 million in the bank. What a shame.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone follows him on Instagram, but I think the place where he's been living in LA has got a great view of the city, because I've seen a few pictures, you know, that he's posed for, you know, obviously clearly had like his pals round to his place. He can't be complaining about his career when he's living with a view like that.
Not at all.
Like, the place looks incredible.
Yeah. You mentioned the title race. Saturday saw three different teams top the league across the space of a day. City went top with a slutchy win over Burnley, which is fairly fair to say.
Yeah, I think they got over the line. That's what champions do, isn't it?
This is what we said on this programme. So City went top at dinner time. Liverpool won at the 3 o'clock kickoff against, I want to say, Sunderland.
Liverpool beat Sunderland. Yes, they did.
Sunderland. And then Chelsea came back from behind to beat Spurs. So
a great result as well. Against obviously previously unbeaten Spurs team in the league.
Yeah. So three teams top the table on the same day. The point I'm making is it's going to be one heck of a title race this season if it keeps up. We're now a quarter of the way through the season-ish, just over. And we've got three teams tied virtually on the same... Are they all on the same points, Tally, or is it there's a point at most between them?
I don't know. I've not actually looked at the physical table.
Yeah,
so, it's too close to early. You mentioned them as well. Arsenal are only going to be a point or two behind them. Arsenal haven't lost since the opening day of the season.
No.
Obviously when they lost to Liverpool. And Arsenal are looking the real deal this year as well. We've been through it before about the title race, but just so good. Some of the teams in there, you know, it looks like everybody's found a new level. It feels like the elite of the division are playing like the elite and are really performing, whereas, you know, the bottom half are maybe struggling a little bit, and hence why it's sort of bunched at the bottom half at the moment.
Yeah.
But as I say, it makes for fascinating view, makes for unpredictable football. You go into every game now thinking it could be any result. You're not thinking it's going to be a walkover.
Did you catch the Swansea Crystal Palace game?
I saw it on Match of the Day.
Yeah, same here.
Which was just how do you even put it? Imagine you're in that press box, you're a journalist, and you're typing up your on the whistle match report.
Yeah, 4-3 Palace.
Exactly. Well, bear in mind, it's 3-3.
Yeah, with 10 minutes to go.
At the point where you are thinking, I've got my report done, 3-3.
We've both been in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing worse than a rewrite, but
yeah, well, there's a rewrite, and then a rewrite of a rewrite, then a rewrite of a rewrite of a rewrite.
Yeah.
This one, and then obviously like, Palace score, they go ahead, you think, all right, yeah, it's a rewrite, but it's an easily adjusted one. All of equalising, all got to delete that, edit that again. Oh my God, Swansea, you can't imagine the carnage. It is a journalist's nightmare.
Yeah.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
As a journalist, you want it to be 4-0, half-time, written your report, job done.
Straight home.
Go home, have a bath, have a cuppa. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you earn your money, though, in the journalism game. That's why you paid the big bucks.
Yeah.
That was a fail application. Catch that. Bob Bradley as well calling Alan Pardew, something like that. And the Premier League, the Premier League. He's not quite caught on yet.
Premier.
Poor Bob, but the Premier League. He'll catch up. Okay, so we've done Gerrard's retirement, we've done the title race. The next topic I wanted to touch on was more recent, actually. Pretty much a formality. We both expect it to happen, as probably did you listening at home. Gareth Southgate's appointment as permanent England manager. We've discussed this on this show. No real surprise in the appointment Tuesday, I think it was.
It was the only real candidate, wasn't he? Yeah. So it was a case of when, not if. I don't think it received massive media coverage because everybody only knew he was getting the job. We've said before, let's give him a go. I find it surprising that there's no like break clauses in his contract. I know he's on a 4-year contract, right, and thinking, build it. If things go disastrously, it looks like this time the FA are going to stick with him. I think it's a good thing.
I do.
But it, again, maybe a little surprising. I thought that, you know, they'd try and find their way out of it.
Yeah.
But No, fair play. You know, he's going to get two full tournaments. So he's got most of a qualifying campaign now.
Yeah. He can start moulding it into his team instead of...
Yeah, and I tell you what will do well for him is the fact that he's a popular lad, clearly, in the changing rooms. He gets on with all the players, he gets on with all the coaches. He seems to get on with a lot of Premier League managers, seems to be well-connected, gets on with the FA. He seems to be the right choice for everybody. Not just the FA, not just England, for everybody. Everybody involved in the setup. And if he can portray that kind of positive atmosphere and that positive attitude across the whole of the England team, there's no reason why it can't become a success because, as we've said, going into every leading tournament of England, England do have the players to be a major force on the international stage.
Yeah.
And it just needs everything to fall into place. And as we said, there's no reason why, you know, Southgate may be, there's no reason why he can't be that man.
There's only one man, incidentally, that's actually managed England and had more England caps than Gareth Southgate. I think Southgate had 56 England caps and now he's a permanent manager.
Trying to work out. It'll be Kevin Keegan.
Kevin Keegan. Well, worked out. I think he had 61.
Yeah.
I thought
he had a few more caps than that. It sounds about right. I was thinking.
Could be slightly out, but I think that's what I saw. Okay, I'm hoping Southgate actually has a longer tenure than Kevin Keegan did. Ill-fated tenure, as it was. The only person I've seen disagree with the appointment of Southgate was James Robson, actually, from the MEN, tweeted today saying Southgate was the probably the only choice, but in terms of his CV, he didn't really have too much experience for the England job.
He has had... you say experience. Every other person who's come in to manage England has never had international experience anyway.
No.
What Gareth Southgate has had is international experience. All right, it's with the under-21s, but he knows how to manage and how to approach, you know, working with his youth teams on and off basis.
Right.
And
that's obviously the skill with international management, only seeing new players every 2 months or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going off the experience bracket, you have to be bringing in someone who's managed 3 other countries before. And there's very, very few of them. And those who generally have done it have tended to be pretty bang average managers.
Right.
It's a tough one. It's a bit of a gamble from the FA, but he's done well with the under-21s. As I say, the atmosphere around, you know, the FA seems to be right around the appointment. There's no reason why it shouldn't go to Southgate for me. There's no point appointing an experienced Premier League manager because, you know, it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah.
I think Allardyce probably was the right man for the job. I think it was the right decision to sack him,
yeah,
given what happened. But, you know, give Southgate a go. Let's see what happened. At the point where he had his, you know, his tenure at Middlesbrough, he was inexperienced. You know, he's since learned, he's since, you know, developed, he's got older, he's got wiser. Yeah, give it a go. Let's see what happens. At the end of the day, we've said it before, can't get much worse.
I was just going to say, England are at the stage where it's virtually rock bottom, so why not give Southgate a go?
Yeah, we might as well. He seems the right fit for this moment.
Yeah, what could go wrong? We get knocked out. We've been knocked out of the Euros. We could fail to. We have failed to qualify. There's nothing. There is no new low, is there? There can't be. Allardyce has been sacked two games into his new job. One game.
Yeah.
There is no new low. So Gareth Southgate, it's a free hit for you.
Yeah.
It is. Absolutely. It's an absolute free hit. So do your worst. Us as England fans, I think, are fully prepared, and we've gone through everything we could have gone through. So
yeah, we all
no
know.
Pressure.
We all know it probably could go wrong, but, you know, let's just hopefully we'll be surprised.
Yeah. We're going to have to switch gears just slightly now onto a slightly more sombre note. You will all have heard that the Brazilian football team, Chapecoense, were travelling to the Brazilian Cup final on an aeroplane on Tuesday, and it came down and killed virtually everybody on board. Obviously, it's terrible news. There's not really much that we can say about it other than it's awful news, but it's been brilliant to see that the world of football has actually come together and supported Chapecoense in it's obviously the darkest time in its history, and actually really refreshing to see how everybody in world football has sort of gone, we'll pull together at this point, because you might be rivals 364 days of the year, but when something like this happens, football becomes completely irrelevant.
It's incredibly sad. simply because of the rise that they've had up the standards. I think it was something like 2009, they were in the fourth tier of the Brazilian football. By 2013, they're in the top tier. By 2016, they're playing, you know, for like a continental title.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. It's just...
Yeah, forgive me for not actually remembering the name of the cup there.
Yeah, it's just completely, you know, tragic. And obviously, I know it's happened a few times before with, obviously, Manchester United with the Busby Babes, with Torino in 1949, Zambia,
yep,
1993. It's just completely tragic. What I've really enjoyed scrolling through social media over the last... It was actually last night, so on Wednesday night, I saw videos of fans of Chapecoense gathering at the club stadium, singing, having a party and properly celebrating the lives, you know, of the footballers who have got them to where they have. There was a great cartoon on Chapecoense's Facebook page, an image, a cartoon image of all the players being handed their winners' medals, but they said it was halos being awarded by God on the clouds.
I saw that.
And the caption was something like, they never got tired of going up, so they went to the highest place, or something, right, translated to along them lines.
Yeah.
And it's just incredibly moving. Beautiful, beautiful image. But they were a team of winners. They've died winners. The whole world could be proud of them.
Yeah. I saw a similar image today, actually, of having a kick about on a cloud in front of the pearly gates. And I think it was Carlos Alberto and Johan Cruyff stood watching. So,
yeah.
Great idea for a cartoon, and very poignant.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right in saying that the team that they were due to play in the final have actually conceded the game as a tribute.
Yeah, they have.
To Chapecoense. And different teams from all over the world have actually offered to loan Chapecoense players to get them through this awful time. And just earlier on, actually, before we started recording this podcast, I saw... This might be unofficial, so forgive me if this doesn't actually ring true, but reports on social media have actually said that Ronaldinho and Johan... Is it Johan Riquelme?
Juan Riquelme,
forgive me. Ronaldinho and Juan Riquelme have actually offered to come out of retirement and play for Chapecoense for a year or two to get them through this awful period, which I think is just an incredible gesture.
Yeah, no, listen, they're going to need all the help they can. There's actually a little bit of pressure on Chapecoense. I say a friend of mine, Jack Lang, who is a Brazilian football fan and journalist, revealed the news that the Brazilian Football Federation are putting pressure on Chapecoense to play their final league match of the season kind of in the next 12 days. Now, I know it sounds extreme, it sounds bad. What he's saying is basically, you've got youth team players, you've got reserve team players, let's get out there and let's celebrate the lives,
right,
of these guys. It's not, you know, pushing it as in a, guys,
we need
come
to
on,
play the league match.
Come on, admin's going to be going all wrong. It's not like they're doing that, you know. And it'll be honest, if they could play, it'd be a great occasion. Because everybody would come out in support, there'd be a big crowd, they could get beat 5-0, everybody would just, you know, they're there to remember the lives and celebrate the lives of others. And it'd be an emotional time if it happens. The whole thing has been emotional. I was, it's just not the sort of news you want to wake up to on a, it was on Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
It's just an incredibly tragic, but they'll move on, they'll get there, they'll remember the lives well, and listen, we wish them all the biggest success in the future.
Absolutely.
And listen, if they were to turn it around and they were to continue building on that success with the new players and the new squad and the existing, well, the ones who didn't make the final squad, who didn't travel, you know, that's a great story, and hopefully they can do it in their honour.
Yeah, this has obviously been a difficult topic to podcast on. We hope we've actually found the right words there and not been insensitive in any way. Aaron's actually got some news on this subject about the Cup Tie on Sunday and about something AFC Wimbledon are intending to do.
Yeah, Wimbledon, obviously the TV companies order that each company, you know, submits the kits. Curzon, we play in royal blue, all royal blue. Wimbledon, we're going to play in a yellow away kit, pretty standard, you know, light versus dark for TV. the TV companies have made an exception this weekend to allow Wimbledon to play in a dark green and light green striped kit in honour of Chapecoense, because it does match their club colours. And I'm sure there'll be little, you know, memorial notes. We'll be wearing black armbands here, in honour of them, conducting a minute's silence. But I think that's a real nice touch from Wimbledon, wearing the colours of Chapecoense, and really nice of the TV companies to kind of break their own rules to allow it as well.
Yeah.
No, a real, real nice touch.
Yeah, and on the flip side to that, I don't know if you saw this, I think Higuain? Could have been Higuain last night, or... Oh, do you know what? I forgot the name of the player. We'll go with Higuain. If it's wrong, correct me. Higuain, I think, scored last night for Juventus, celebrated a goal, took his shirt off, revealed a message... Something along the lines of...
Edison Cavani.
Cavani, yeah, Cavani. That's what I meant.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a football show and I can't remember footballers, but... Edison Cavani scored a goal, celebrated, took his shirt off, had a message about Chapecoense on his shirt. And the referee, probably the most villainous man in all of football, by now decided to book Cavani for that message of support for Chapecoense, which
I can't imagine what goes through the referee's head, because the referee's head will know, this is horrible, I really do not want to book him, I really don't want to do it, but it's the letter of the law, and at what point do you start making exceptions? And
yeah,
everyone would have liked to have seen an exception for that one.
Yeah,
but it's the letter of the law. It's a tough one.
It's a tough spot,
me being a former referee, I feel sorry for the referee in that spot, and look, the decision goes for his man.
Yeah,
obviously it's a shame it had to happen, but I suppose the laws do state it.
He'll be off a few Christmas card lists, I'm sure. Yeah, particularly Cavani's. But what do you make of that rule in general, taking your shirt off? Is it a bookable offence in this day and age? I think going into the crowd is a bookable offence.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Taking your shirt off, I mean, I don't see what harm it does. But what it does do, it always delays the restart of play. And little things like that. And it slows the game down. Because they take the shirt off, they throw it, and then they take a minute finding it. Whether to throw it, you know, and things like
it's
that.
It's in the crowd, yeah.
Oh, yeah, kids running around, fucking ball boy's got it under his shirt. Obviously, that's a little far-fetched every now and again, but there's no real need to take off your shirt.
No, but I suppose in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Something like Ryan Giggs. I don't know if Giggs actually got booked for his...
No, the law wasn't in place.
No, I was going to say.
The law states you can lift up your shirt,
right,
but you can't go over your head. So, you know, if you've got a message, you can... lift it all. I don't know, it's just...
You should have a big cue card from the side, just carry that around with you. Big piece of cardboard, bit of A3.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, the laws of the game clearly state, you know, what players have to be wearing at all times to be on the pitch. I suppose if they don't have the shirt on, they're not in the correct equipment, are they?
It's true. We didn't write the laws, did we?
No. I mean, it is petty, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Speaking of Christmas cards, by the way, I saw something funny on Twitter the other day that... It might have been football clichés. I'm sure you follow football clichés.
Yeah.
Very funny Twitter page. Adam Hurry.
Yeah.
Tweeted something like, this weekend signifies the start of commentators calling short back passes early Christmas presents. short back passes early Christmas presents, which I thought was brilliant, because it really is. And I think actually on the day that he tweeted that, who did Arsenal play at weekend? At home.
Bournemouth. Oh, the first goal
straight to Sanchez, and I think the commentator, could have been Rob Hawthorne, said, oh, that's an early Christmas present for Alexis Sanchez. And he must have been sat at home thinking, got it. Nailed it. Yeah, I love things like that. He's actually got a great Twitter account. He's really accurate.
He wrote a great book about football cliches.
Read it.
It really is excellent. It's funny as well, because
fantastic.
You don't realise how many times you say it's the sort of the phrases which are mentioned.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
And when Chelsea were hammering United 4-0 the other week, he tweeted at 4-0, Philippe Albert warming up for the famous 5-0 Newcastle win over United a few years ago. So stuff like that makes me giggle. We'll move on from that, and we'll try and cheer this podcast up a little bit. Let me just find where the subjects are on my phone. Right. We wanted to touch on something that's done its rounds on social media. It's become a bit of a buzz story. The rise of Red Bull Leipzig over in the Bundesliga.
Well, you're right saying RB, because technically they're not actually called Red Bull Leipzig.
Are they not?
Because of a branding rule.
Okay, right,
Germany.
So
believe it or not, there is actually a branding rule stopping them being called Red Bull Leipzig.
There you go.
Even though they are called Red Bull Leipzig.
Yeah.
They're called something like, what is it? something Rassen ball kicking Leipzig. Something where the initials could be RB. RB or
right.
Anyway.
Right.
They found a way around.
Yeah.
Found a way around.
A technicality. So anyway, the story is that they've risen through the ranks on the back of Red Bull's purchase of the club. And currently top the Bundesliga by, I can't remember how many points now, but...
3 points.
3 points ahead of Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Unbeaten for the season?
Yeah.
Am I right to say?
Yeah,
unbeaten for the season. And it's a story that sort of captured the imaginations, both good and bad, of people on social media. What's your take on the whole thing?
I'll be honest, I kind of like them. Now, hear me out on this, and everybody...
The floor is yours.
Please do. It's not that I like Red Bull. I mean, I like the drink. You know, it goes well with an unnamed
or other brands.
An alcoholic beverage of some kind.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see the Bundesliga shaken up a little bit. And I love the Bundesliga. I think it is an exciting league anyway. Like it's always Bayern and Dortmund, really. I know Dortmund have had a couple of wobbles recently, but you know, it's generally Bayern and Dortmund. But it's nice to see a proper unexpected story. And I think people always knew they weren't going to go straight back down. They were going to consolidate. They were going to build. They've got a squad of players that you wouldn't be able to name off them. It's not like they've put together, you know, a star-studded squad. They're just a good footballing team with a togetherness. And, you know, I think it's excellent what they're doing. I mean, obviously, that's nothing to do with the sponsorship. As a team and what they're achieving, I think it's absolutely outstanding.
Is the fact that it's... Red Bull, as a company that purchased the club, is it any different than somebody like Sheikh Mansour taking over Manchester City?
No, not massively. I mean, the fact that the branding and the name has changed slightly.
I think that's where people have got humped with it.
People are a bit annoyed about it because they don't really want to be named after a company. They want to be the club with a soul, not a company. You know, it's a tough one. I can't imagine what will happen. I'd say when Red Bull take over a team in England, because it'll happen one day.
Red Bull Curzon Ashton.
No.
RB Curzon Ashton, sorry.
RB Curzon, how much money are they offering?
RB CAFC. Yeah, just initialise the club.
We've got a unique enough name as it is, I think. So,
people can't get it right, though, can they?
No, Ashton Curzon.
Yeah, Kirsten was on Granada Reports, I think.
Oh, he's always wrong. Always wrong.
Well,
but the branding of clubs is maybe not desirable, but and then there's money there for someone. You can understand why they're doing it. I believe they were in talks with Swindon over maybe taking over Swindon. They're a club that's been struggling financially at the moment. You have to say, all right, a slight name change and stuff. The club can be back on track. Do you take it? Yeah, you probably do.
If you're in a position where you can't, there is no other option.
Yeah, it's amazing to see what they've done to Leipzig. Nobody will have expected that. And simply because it's an unexpected story for this season alone. You know, I hope they go on and do it, and it's a great story.
It's nice to see a little bit of communism in football as opposed to breaking the monopoly of the big teams, like you say. So the money, it's not even, the money's never going to be even in football, but by somebody like Red Bull coming and taking over a club like Leipzig, it does sort of even the playing field out a little bit.
To an extent, until people get used to it, and then they're waiting for someone else to come and break
with more money.
But there's a similar amount of time before more and more clubs are getting taken over. I think nearly all of the Premier League clubs have been in some kind of takeover in the last few years. There's not many who haven't. The same's happening now in Germany and Italy. The top global brands are being taken over.
I can't think of any fan-owned clubs in the top tier.
In England?
Yeah.
I don't think there is in England, is there? No.
I can't think of any.
No.
If you can, please let us know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's where German football's different.
Yeah.
All the clubs have to be over 50% fan-owned.
Yep.
But
it's a business now, football. There's no doubt about it.
The off-the-field stuff, if I'll be honest, isn't that enjoyable anymore.
You'd know.
The night, yeah. Well, that's just all I do.
Yeah.
I'm part of the problem. But no, I love the night, honestly, I really do. Yeah. I just love sitting and watching just 90 minutes of football, a match. None of the hoo-ha around it. No transfer speculation. Transfer speculation can get in the bin.
Transfer, don't you write about transfer
rumours on a daily basis, yeah. Transfer rumours can get in the bin. Like, all right, yeah. So most of them are true. They come from some kind of a source.
Yeah, Sky sources.
But there are, yeah, it's always Sky sources.
Mythical.
Yeah, but they're just so boring.
Yeah.
They really are boring. You know,
how many years have United supposedly been signing Wesley Schneider?
Still trying, aren't
it's it? Probably, it's 48 now. And Ronaldo and Bale and Neymar in a triple swoop. It's the same story, just recycled every year.
I'm not doubting the fact that clubs like United and, like, obviously United are trying to sign Neymar, they will have made inquiries about Lionel Messi, just like Manchester City. All right, they sound far-fetched, but...
Yeah, why would you not, though?
You know, at the end of the day, your club's with mega money and with big income. They're going to ask. You know, there will be truth in them.
Yeah.
The only thing is people get annoyed. It's like, oh, you're reporting on something that's never going to happen, because it probably is never going to happen. People said that Paul Pogba wasn't going to happen, though, with United not in the Champions League, so, you know.
Stranger things have happened, haven't they? Speaking of big money moves, and at the time, Cristiano Ronaldo was the world record transfer when he transferred to Real Madrid for 80 million. We want to finish this show today with something that started on Twitter last week. I can't remember how it came about, but me and Aaron sort of started arguing about who's the better out-and-out goal scorer, Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi. In the blue corner, we've got Aaron Flanagan, Team Messi.
Absolutely.
Blue for Curzon, you see what I did there?
Yeah,
okay. over in the red corner for United. And I'm even in my semi-red jumper today.
Yeah.
Red for United with Cristiano Ronaldo. Team Ronaldo is me, so... We're obviously disagreeing about who's the greatest modern goal scorer. It's obviously between these two. There's nobody else in the conversation. Personally, my belief is it's Ronaldo.
Well, you're wrong.
Tell me why I'm wrong. No, I'll just kick you as well.
For me, he's getting violent over it. Bloody hell. No, for me, Lionel Messi is just the greatest player of all time. I've never... For me... I think he's absolutely fantastic because he has everything to his game.
Okay.
But, and we mentioned goal scoring. Right, okay. Goal scoring. There's not a type of goal which Lionel Messi does not score. All right, okay. He doesn't get every header, but he does score headers when he needs to.
He scored a header against us in the Champions League final.
It's not the way that Barcelona play. You know, they're not going to keep whipping balls into the box. But honestly, he's got the dinks. He's got, you know, he can smash one. He can take someone on. He can take one round the goalkeeper. You put him in front of goal, he will score against 99% of goalkeepers in the world, pretty much regardless.
I don't disagree.
The man does not miss. He does not miss. And he can add free kicks into there as well. All right, he doesn't do that knuckleball thing that, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo does. Knuckleball with the arm gesture.
Yeah, you can't see, but he did do it. I can vouch for it.
But for me, he's just phenomenal. And for a lad of his size, to be that commanding, you know, best footballer in the world.
I don't disagree at all with the fact that he's the best player in the world. He's an absolute joy to watch. Yeah. Every time he gets the ball, you think, what's he going to do? But by the same token, Ronaldo is absolute box office to watch. You can't deny that he is, without a doubt.
He's entertaining. I find myself getting wound up by him.
He's not a likeable footballer in terms of his personality and his strops and everything else. But I just think Cristiano Ronaldo, like you said about Messi, Ronaldo can score every single type of goal, and he has done. He scored a free kick from 40 yards, he scored a header against Roma for United. You've probably seen it countless times.
Yeah.
One of the best headers I've ever seen. The fact that he weren't even on the screen when Paul Scholes dinked it up, held the ball up, and he comes steaming in.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that he's two-footed, powerful in the air, he's got every attribute going. And I think his Real Madrid goal-scoring record... Well, I know it. It's better than a goal a game.
Yeah. Well,
it's Messi's.
Same for Messi in Barcelona, yeah.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why their goal scoring records are so similar. Because they're nearly identical of everything else, because both of them can't miss. It's a really tough discussion. It's like, who's better? It's like, they're both near enough faultless in front of goal.
Yeah, it's the irresistible force against the immovable object, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
The thing is with Ronaldo, he's in the game for Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not in the game for his team, and that's the difference between him and Messi. I think I saw, this was a weird clip actually, you've probably seen it yourself, but it was a Champions League game and somebody scored a winning goal in the last minute. It could have been Benzema, and he put his arm up to claim for offside against his own player. I don't know if he actually did, but it looked like it.
I remember the interview after he claimed it wasn't. He claimed it was like appealing to the referee for something, not for a foul, obviously, with the gold stand, but he was making himself aware. I don't know what excuse he made, but.
Regardless, he does salt when he doesn't score. If somebody nicks a goal for him, he does.
That's a good quality, though. You want your goal scorers to want to score.
Absolutely.
It is a good quality. You have to remember that.
And the other argument I was going to pitch for Ronaldo versus Messi was that Ronaldo has done it in England. I'm not saying Messi wouldn't do it in England, because that would be absurd.
Yeah. Look at,
but he hasn't yet.
Look at Lionel Messi's goal scoring record against English teams. His goal scoring record against English teams is better than against most of the nation in the world.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, as far as I'm concerned, you say, oh, he can't do it against the English team, can't do it in England. Every time he comes to England, he does it, he scores. Every single time.
Yeah.
It's a given. And, you know, if he comes, when he comes, maybe.
Ooh.
Maybe.
If he comes, is he coming to City?
Well, if Guardiola's still there, I can't see him playing for another Premier League team against Guardiola.
Not me neither.
Given the fact that they are still friends. It's a bit far-fetched it happening, isn't it? But
yeah, I don't think I'll ever leave Barca, but you can...
But
I hope to see him in the Premier League, even if it is for City, which I would absolutely hate.
Yeah. No, it'd be a joy to watch.
Without a doubt.
It'd be surreal. It'd be the moment that I'd give up supporting City, because, you know, things, it could not possibly get better than that.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi playing for your club.
Yeah. Yeah, even if he is 38.
No, he's the best footballer of all time playing for your club.
Without a doubt, would you rate him above Pele and Maradona?
Yeah, I would myself. I think what he's achieved in the modern day game, given his size, given everything.
Other than international.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but he's reached loads of major finals.
Yeah.
As an international. He's led an Argentina team who, the squad in general, is quite average. Yeah, if you look at it man for man, it's not great. And he's led them to reasonable success.
The only thing is, Argentina have never qualified for the European Championships, so... That's always going to be a blot on his copybook.
Yeah. Ronaldo's always got that one on him.
Yeah. Yeah, and even if he did get subbed off and started crying in the final.
Yeah, and then celebrated as if he scored the winner.
Yeah, and if he's still in his kit as well, but John Terry-esque.
Yeah.
John Terry-esque. That's a trend that's caught on as well. I've seen a few players do that since.
Do a John Terry.
Yeah, model yourself on John Terry, that's the way forward. I think that is just about it. Aaron's on a bit of a tight schedule today with the work that he does at Curzon Ashton, so we'll let him get back to his day job. Aaron, always a pleasure, mate.
No, pleasure to be here.
Wish Curzon all the best on Sunday.
Thank you.
And I'm watching from home, unfortunately. I'm an armchair supporter these days. I don't get to many football games. I'll be here on Curzon Stalybridge Celtic, the Boxing Day, and then the 2nd.
Yeah, Boxing Day at Stalybridge.
Yeah.
And Monday, the 2nd of January, 3 p.m. kickoff here at the Tameside Bernabeu.
Tameside Bernabeu, yeah. Santiago of Tameside. The Bernabeu, as it's called. Yeah, so I'll be at both of those, hopefully. But we'll be with you before those. But yeah, all the best to Curzon on Sunday. Thank you to you for listening at home. It's always greatly received, your listening, your viewership. What do we call it? Listening viewership, something like that. It's always greatly received. If you can, drop by iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. It only takes less than a minute. It's free to do, and it really bumps us up the charts and allows more people to find us. So,
can I just give a little shout out to Tom Armstrong, who is a York supporter, who was down at Bromley versus York at the weekend, and he grabbed me and said, someone made a reference to it, and went, oh, I know that because I heard you on the Zip Media.
Oh really?
Podcast, and I went, oh great, have you given us a 5-star rating? And I went, yes, because you told us to.
That's fantastic.
So we do have one.
Kudos.
Cheers, Tom.
Tom Armstrong, absolutely. Be more like Tom. Please do give us a 5-star rating. It does take less than a minute, and it does us some great benefit. We can start getting ad money as well if we get enough ratings. So it's money in my pocket. If you do, so free of charge, give us a 5-star rating. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, follow the website, zipsportsmedia.com. Follow Aaron, either on his personal Twitter page, at Aaron Flan, or at Mirror Football. Get down to the game on Sunday. Come and get your tickets for Curzon Ashton against AFC Wimbledon, or if not, catch them on the box, BT Sport 1, at 12 o'clock.
Up the Nash.
Up the Nash. From myself and Aaron, thank you very much for listening, and listen to episode 7 in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you very much.